Chapter 12. Hollis. Never one to sleep in, even on weekends, Hollis Johns rose early. Sleeping in was a harbinger of creeping indolence. It foretold a lack of caring, a taking of things, everything, for granted. He climbed out of bed and eyed his wife as he untwisted his pajamas and put on his robe. Susan was sleeping hard, even as blades of new sunlight were slicing through the blinds and leaving long, bright, strafing patterns up the covers and along the side of her face. Her mouth was open slightly, and she was snoring. Her hair was matted and tangled and limp over her ear. Hollis cinched the belt of his robe with a sharp yank. She looked like she had been dropped into the bed from 10,000 feet up, but for the mucus-laden rasp of her breath and a low snore, like the sound of a straw finding pockets of old wet mud. But for these things, she was quiet and lifeless. Hollis padded downstairs to his study and retrieved the straw mat that he stored in a roll behind the door. Then he headed back up to the living room, where he unrolled the mat in its usual spot on the floor behind the couch. He took off his robe and draped it over the back of the sofa, looking through the windows before him out into the back lawn. Ambitious shafts of sunlight were igniting the rhododendrons and bleaching the lawn the color of young apples. The restorative function of sleep was certainly important, even essential, but one had to know something of the line between restoration and overindulgence. Life was about getting up in the morning, every morning, greeting the day and whatever it had in store, even on the weekends. The notion that on weekends it was permissible, even expected, for people to sleep in until 10 o'clock in the morning was, for Hollis, a kind of heresy. For most of America, weekends were a regular mini-holiday, not just from work, but from living, from consciousness. Weekends were like little opium dens of time tucked in between Fridays and Mondays, where people kept the blinds pulled and burled into mountains of blankets and cushions and wafted in and out of a dreamlike stupor. Reading the newspaper in bed, eating breakfast in bed, watching the weekend sports shows in bed. We were a nation of weekend invalids. Hollis listened to the still of the house behind him. The refrigerator hummed in a low thrumming from the kitchen as its frozen half dumped another load of ice cubes into the bucket. The wall clock in the dining room was dicing the morning into even cylindrical pieces that fell silently upon the fibers of medium plush ecru carpeting. The boiler fired up out in the garage, heating its hard, fluoridated brew like a giant industrial coffee maker. But while Hollis could feel his wife and his youngest son sleeping, those were all the sounds that reached him. The rest was quiet. Two robins snagged and yanked his attention forward, hopping in and out of shadow, getting those worms. Chapter 3. David.
Who is the most important historical figure you can name?
They stare at me, bright and twinkling with attention, soaking me in, assessing me, measuring me against the others, and I am ready for them. I sit on the edge of the desk and swing my leg, looking from face to face, letting them take stock before getting down to business. The first day energy is palpable, fresh, young, hungry minds. I roll a stick of chalk from one palm to the other like dice. They blink at me.
Don't be shy, folks. No judgment here. Who do you think is the most important historical figure of all time?
Swing, swing, swing. Roll, roll, roll. Blink, blink.
Anybody? Anybody at all? Don't all dive in at once.
Blink, blink.
How about you? Over in the back there. What's your name?
I look at my seating chart.
Ashley? What do you think, Ashley?